Welcome everyone to the statewide Children's Committee meeting. I can't believe this is our third time meeting virtually since this all started. But thank you all for taking the time to join us this morning. My name is Kirby Fai. I'm with the department. Just a few reminders. First one, please make sure, I think everybody's pretty good to go on this, but please make sure your phone or computer is muted if you're not speaking, just to prevent any feedback. And if you have any questions or comments throughout the meeting today, please state your name for the purpose of the minute. It's helpful to us. Also, per Governor Lee's Executive Order 65, this meeting is being recorded, so it will be posted to the department website either later today or early tomorrow morning. Just want to let you all know that. I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance. First, I'll go through the names of individuals who have joined via WebEx because I could see your name. And then I'll go through the call-in users. So like I said, my name is Kirby Fai. I'm with the department. I see Amy Holland, Alicia Smith-Knight, Ashley Jasinski, Avis Easley, Elizabeth Seti-Reeve, Jerry Moore, Jessica Mullins, Carrie Virgo, Kurt Hippel, Lindsay Blevins, Lisa Pellegrin, Mary Katsikas, Melissa Birdwell. Melissa, did you call in as well? Because I see two Melissas on here.
No, I'm just on a computer.
Oh, okay. I see a Melissa who called in. Can you state your last name? I only see Melissa.
Melissa McGee is here, but I'm on WebEx.
Okay, it's just showing your first name. Hi, Melissa. Amy Olson is here, Ricky Harris, and it looks like we have four call-in users. If you don't mind stating your name, please.
Kayla Withrow, Frontier Health.
Hi, Kayla.
Emily McKee, same High Tennessee.
Can you state your name again? Sorry, cut out.
Emily McKee. I'm an intern with AIM High Tennessee.
Oh, hi, Emily.
Amy Irvin, IRVIN, Region 3 with Omni Community Health.
Hi, Amy.
Steve Petty, TCCY.
Hey, Steve.
Hello.
Have I missed anyone? It looks like, oh, we have one more caller. Who just joined the call?
Hey, this is Adam Nickus with Youth Villages.
Hi, Adam.
Good morning.
Okay, I think that about covers it. And we could, if we see any callers join throughout the meeting, Ricky or Lindsay, we can always touch base at the end of the meeting as well to get those names for attendance. So right now, I'll hand it over to you all.
Thank you, Kirby, and thank you all for joining. It's encouraging to have so many people on the call. I appreciate it. And again, like Kirby said, find it somewhat hard to believe that we are once again meeting via WebEx. So in light of that comment, today we wanted to focus a little bit just on talking through some of the impact of the pandemic, not just on mental health overall, but specifically on you all and your work with children. And so Lindsay's going to kick us off with the first part of that discussion, and we'll go from there. Lindsay?
Yes, good morning, everybody. My computer is running really slow this morning, and I was trying to pull up a couple of things just for a reference point. But, you know, as Ricky was saying, we really want to encourage everybody to have some conversation about what this pandemic is doing for us personally and professionally. So the beginning part of our conversation is just around the effects on the kids that we work with, specifically education. I know that there's been a lot of changes that have gone on for the past 7-8 months or so, you know, starting back in March when our children, you know, were disrupted from school because of the pandemic and really have not gotten back to a sense of normalcy. I've had a lot of conversations with different school districts, with mental health providers, with parents, and really trying to get a grasp on how this is impacting our children's mental health. It's impacting their ability to learn. And so I really wanted to kind of see from y'all what you guys are seeing across the state and have a conversation about things that we're doing that we're finding helpful, things that we're doing that maybe are not working so well, that we can kind of get an idea of how to move forward with some of these things. I think that I'm in West Tennessee, and there are differences in how we're providing education to all of our students over here, depending on what district you live in, what county you live in. You know, some of our kids are 100% virtual. Some of our kids are 100% in person. And then there's, you know, all these mixtures in between. And I work in mental health. You know, I work at Lakeside, and, you know, I've talked to several crisis providers in the adult world and the kid world, and like I said, a whole bunch of parents and things like that. And this is really affecting kids' mental health, you know, and their ability to be around other people. And so I kind of wanted to open it. The whole point of this is to have a discussion. So tell me a little bit about what y'all are seeing around, and I can throw in some other information as we go. Anybody?
Hey, this is Carrie Virgo. I'm not doing direct service anymore, but I figured I would throw out there from a personal standpoint. This is our second bout of quarantine. And my daughter, who is a freshman, when the hybrid schedules came out, she is diagnosed with ADHD and anxiety. And for her, the hybrid schedule was incredibly difficult. She was extremely anxious all the time because when they're doing online classes, you know, you're competing with the other students for the teacher's attention. There isn't kind of the one-on-one explanations and instructions that there were in a classroom setting. And so when she went back full time, there was definitely a sense of relief. However, now that we are on quarantine because she was COVID exposed, we are back in the same boat that we were in previously. 2 weeks before that, my son got sent home from college with COVID, and we had to isolate her and send her to live with the neighbors for 2 weeks. So, you know, from a personal standpoint, I have to say I'm exhausted. And I can only imagine what some of the families are going through that are out there right now. Especially when you have multiple children in the home. I mean, my children are teenagers, so it's a little less, you know, they're still self-sufficient and we can still do what we need to do. And in addition, I am fortunate enough to get to work from home. So I guess from my standpoint, I just wanted to throw that out there in the sense that I feel the panic and frustration and wanting to do the right thing, but not knowing what the right thing is all the time. You're kind of like, okay, I know I need to quarantine, but what does that actually look like? Can I go to the store and get stuff? And so it just creates kind of a very different dynamic in the home. So I do think it's something to take into consideration with our families who may not have a lot of the same resources and supports that some folks do that they can rely on. So I don't know if that's what you were looking for, Lindsay, but I figured I'd just throw that out there. And yeah, so there you go.
No, I appreciate that. That's very helpful. You made a couple of good points. There are some people who have different resources, right? You're lucky enough to be able to work from home. You have kids who are old enough that can kind of log on by themselves, can, you know, ensure that they are doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. You know, I've also had our own bouts of having to be quarantined. Our kids were exposed in class, and they shut our classroom down for a couple of weeks. My husband and I are both essential, and so we have to go to work every day. We can't work from home, and so I had to send them somewhere, whether that was daycare or school or something like that. And, you know, you run those risks, even with the precautions that people take of, you know, getting impacted by it and having to figure out and navigate through that system. My kid does very well in school, my older one, but at home he struggles. He did not like being virtual, and so that added a lot of anxiety. Am I getting everything right? You know, there's no constant communication with the teacher. You know, he thrives on that social aspect. I've also had conversations with people. I live in Fayette County, and that is there's a lot of poverty in that county and not a lot of internet access. And so the struggle with, you know, if the school district is 100% virtual and you can't get internet, your child is basically not going to school. So the added pressures of the educational realm, you know, in surveys that have gone out, you know, across the country, about 4 in 10 of all adults say that they've either them or their spouse has lost their job or had a pay cut, loss of hours. So you add on the stresses, the financial stressors, and then on top of that, the educational stressors. And while adults try to, for the most part, maybe shield their children from some of those additional anxieties and stressors, that can impact our kids as well. So thank you, Carrie, for sharing. Does anyone else have anything that they could share?
And this is Megan. So I'm in Region 6. And similar to what Lindsay said, every school district's doing something a little bit different. However, by the end of this month, pretty much every school is going to be either hybrid or back face-to-face, with some families still electing to do work from home. We know a lot of our children that have mental health conditions, the family has opted to let them work from home. So what our school districts have been doing is if they're not logging in and doing the work, they're having a meeting with the family to put a remediation plan in place to make sure that they're doing the work. They've been doing things like, okay, so the internet at your house using your family's phone as a hotspot isn't working. Here is a hotspot from the school that's directly tied in. That's the only purpose it has. You know, your signal might be stronger. So they've done a lot of stuff to relieve financial stressors or internet stressors for families out here. They've actually, in some of our rural counties, set up buses that are hotspot enabled and have the bus parked around different parts of the county. So kids can go log in and get the work they need to do, do the work, head home, come back, upload it, participate in a live class from the parking lot if they need to, from the vehicle. So they've gotten really creative. But our kids that are not performing, that are not showing up to class, they've given the family options of your kid does the work, you find a way to monitor the work, or your kid's going to show up at school on Monday. And we've had some kids come back in to the building to get caught back up because they haven't done any work all semester or very little work. And so we've also seen mental health emergencies where families are putting appropriate consequences in place for not doing online school. And then we have a mental health emergency because typically it means, okay, you don't have a cell phone while you're sitting at the kitchen table doing your work because you're getting on TikTok instead of doing the schoolwork. And so we've actually had mental health emergencies that have erupted from conversations parents have had with their kids about not doing the schoolwork. I also want to send a shout out of praise to Shelby County Schools. We met with them really early on and formed a plan that if one of their mental health counselors, one of their school counselors is doing an online meeting with a kid, and there's a mental health emergency, we're going to do a three-way televideo conference. So the school counselor is actively involved during the entire assessment, just like if we were physically at their school, since they're fully virtual right now. So we've been very collaborative with our education partners. On the mental health side, we've seen a sharp increase in the number of emergency and home referrals that have been made, mainly because mental health has deteriorated so far over the past 6 to 8 months now that it's reached the point where we're on the precipice of an out-of-home removal, either to state's custody, to families can't handle their kid being home any longer, to the point of potential inpatient hospitalization. So we've seen kids jump from almost no services to very intense services as a way to try to stabilize them as quickly as possible. The last thing I'll say, so I don't monopolize the conversation, living in a very rural area, we're also in a position where the majority of our rural counties don't have a mask mandate right now. Only one county has a mask mandate that I'm aware of, and that's Henry. Even with cases really rising in certain counties, they're still on a mask mandate. And so that means no one is masking. Public events, all of these fall fests that just happened, no masks anywhere in sight. Birthday parties, no masks. Kids trick-or-treating, no masks. And so there's also, outside of our metros, I guess there's a lack of seriousness just because our caseloads in terms of COVID cases has declined, that I think there's a sense of false security out here.
Thank you for sharing, Megan. Yes, that's true kind of in the southern part of West Tennessee as well, kind of variations in the mask mandates and who's wearing, who's not wearing. We've also had certain schools that have kind of taken on requirements for wearing masks, even if there's not a mask mandate in place. What are y'all seeing in the East Tennessee area? Is there anyone on here from East Tennessee?
Yes, this is Melissa Bardwell. And I'm in Northeast Tennessee, and I can say that the variation is very much the same, that we have some schools who are doing hybrid models. We had one, for example, just announced yesterday that they're going back to virtual for the entire month of November, fully virtual. So just lots of variation, same with masks. You go some places, you see people wearing them, you go others, you don't. I also just so happened this morning talked to the director of our crisis services, and she was saying that she has definitely seen an uptick in children in crisis recently. And from talking with our staff who are school-based, I would say that's the same thing that they're seeing, that has increased a little bit as of late.
This is Kayla Withrow from East Tennessee. I actually am school-based, and I'm in a Johnson City school that is hybrid, so some students have the option to be remote, but a good chunk of the school is here full-time, which thankfully the school is very strict about the masks, and working for Frontier, they're really strict about masks. Wearing those when we're providing care, but there has been a huge increase in crisis services here at school. We get them almost daily. So it's been really, really intense.
Yeah, I was going to echo that as well, that, you know, we have a lot of students that are, I'm sorry, I'm Amy Irvin in Southeast Tennessee, and so we have a lot of students that are able to attend in person. I have not heard of a lot of schools going virtual, or if they do, it'd be for a week or a time when the school itself has to close down. And so that's been good. A lot of our students are attending in person. Some, of course, are taking advantage of virtual. But I think the other issue, like we've been saying, is the mental health crisis has definitely been on the rise for what we've seen. And also, as we're trying to provide services to even keep things going okay or prevent further escalation, what's happening is family members are getting exposed, or even when they're having symptoms, you know, and we're all just kind of on pins and needles of, okay, you really need in-home services to be most effective, but because you know, you've got a child in the home that's got a cough or a sore throat, or, you know, it's causing everybody to kind of be skittish about that. And so then we might be doing a telehealth session instead, which loses its effectiveness.
Hey, this is Mary from the Knoxville area. We have a mask mandate here, so there's a high level of compliance within the school systems and obviously in our community. The thing that I would say is the suicide rates are concerning. We actually had two high schoolers within a week that attempted and completed. So, you know, I think just to echo everything that everybody has already mentioned, the multiple stress levels, the compounding with existing mental health and not being able to have eyes on a child all the time, whether in the school system, even if it's a virtual session that they're attending. I think, you know, the lack of being able to observe a child that might need a referral. You know, there's so many gaps in our system now because of the pandemic. So a lot of these kids are getting missed. So, you know, it's a complicated situation and I'm not real sure what the fix is. I can also say that our parents, we've had a couple of instances where a school or a classroom or a daycare have shut down because of a COVID positive situation for, like everyone else has mentioned, 2-week period. And, you know, given all the other circumstances that the families are already dealing with, then putting that on top of it, whether juggling employment, whether being unemployed, not really knowing how to address the COVID situation with their child, depending on age, we have found, you know, has just really complicated the situation. And we, locally here, we've partnered with our school district to actually address different levels of COVID exposure and have provided some kind of like COVID isolation tools in a little care package that can be sent home with families that have to isolate, whether it's a classroom or whether it's one individual or two individuals, whatever the situation is, just to help them kind of talk through the situation with their child and try to provide some peace, as difficult as it is, but at least open up the door to have conversation and to be okay with having the conversation to a certain degree. But again, I don't, you know, there's just so many levels of complexities at this point. It's become a really big struggle.
Thank you everyone for sharing. Mary, you bring up a good point, and that was kind of where I was going to go next too, is Megan mentioned, you know, that they've partnered with Shelby County Schools to really set a good process in place if there is a child in crisis that the counselor is working with, you know, setting up a 3-way kind of assessment. Mary, you said that you guys have really given resource toolkits to the schools, having conversations, starting to talk about what they can do if they find themselves isolated, if they find themselves having to, you know, be stuck in the house for a couple of weeks, things of that nature. Has anyone else found a way or have some good ideas on things that they've done or have heard of? Maybe they not personally or at the agency they work for, but know of things that are going on in the community that have really helped reduce, because I do think that our mental health emergencies are on the rise. Like you mentioned, our suicide rates are on the rise. Kids seeking out or needing services are on the rise. So are there things that we can do to mitigate some of that stuff? Are there resources or tools that we've put in place that we have found that have been somewhat successful? I think telehealth is a big one, and Megan kind of mentioned that with hers, but I think there's a lot of agencies who are providing telehealth services because we're becoming so used to
this virtual platform. People are finding more comfort in doing that. So I think telehealth across the state, I have heard, has been more widely used than maybe it had been in the past.
Yeah. So Lindsay, go ahead.
Ricky, was that you?
It was, but you go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Lindsay, it's Mary again, and I was just going to say that, you know, we have really valued the ability to provide telehealth in the midst of the pandemic, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it was just an area that people didn't feel as comfortable with, especially around children. We're used to floor play and other techniques to be able to communicate depending on the age level of the child. But I think we have found so many ways to get creative via video. And I think, you know, it's really been a true blessing to still continue to reach these families in the midst of all this. Because the alternative would be they would have had nothing when, you know, we had this stay-at-home order and everything else. I mean, the obvious thing is people still don't feel comfortable coming in face-to-face. So having an option and still being able to get an intervention is just more than we could ask for in the current atmosphere.
This is Alicia, and I would just say, as a parent of a 15-year-old with significant behavioral health needs, being able to connect with her therapist and her doctor virtually has been invaluable to us. She's a lot more comfortable in her home. I think that they both see, you know, her in a different light and can help point out, you know, some of the stressors a little bit differently because it is in the home. And then just for me as a parent, I don't have to take off 3 and 4 hours of work, you know, grabbing her from school, taking her to, you know, the appointments, coming back and things like that. So it's been great for me, and, you know, and I can still connect with both of them during her sessions. So as a parent, it's been very helpful.
From a training standpoint with the mental health community, there have been a lot of amazing trainings that have happened and collaborations. So I was at the CCJ conference earlier last week and was able to attend some sessions on play therapy, on how to sanitize your play therapy room for COVID, what toys you might want to put away, what toys you might want to take out, how to handle it with projects going from A to B. I was able to attend an amazing session from Emory last week on how to counsel effectively wearing a mask, because we're increasingly looking to start to go back face-to-face for crisis assessment. And so we're doing a lot of supplemental training on how to effectively counsel while wearing a mask while not exhausting your voice. So you have a voice for the next day and the next child. So I think there's been a lot of really cool training opportunities on how to do therapy via telehealth for clients where it's very not safe for them to go into an office environment. So if you're not plugged into a lot of the different like listservs for trainings and things like that, I highly suggest it because I know it's been incredibly helpful to take that information back to our organization.
Thank you for sharing. Ricky, did you have something that you wanted to add?
No. Well, yes and no. It kind of goes into the next conversation, so I'll wait and just to make sure we haven't shut down any other comments before we move to the next part of the discussion.
Yeah, we are kind of to the end where Ricky's going to move on to our next discussion. Does anyone else have any final comments for this? I appreciate you all sharing. It was a great discussion. All right, Ricky, I think it's all you.
Okay, thanks. Kind of a perfect segue, and thank you, Megan, for that, because I wanted to talk a little bit about, as providers and professionals providing services, where we're going in terms of how we're delivering services now and how we are getting back to some of those face-to-face opportunities. As you all have mentioned, there are there are ways in which we've been able to continue our work thanks to telehealth, which has been a huge blessing, but there's also needs, and you guys have discussed that, to be face-to-face, for instance, crisis assessments and situations where we just need to be face-to-face with the family or with the kids that we serve. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what you guys may be trying out or sharing with others that we can just sort of gain on how we're moving back into those face-to-face assessments. And to throw out just an example, we have been looking at with our school-based liaisons, they're going back into the schools as schools are open. And the mask thing that you said, Megan, was so important because it's very difficult for our kids and our therapists both to kind of try and communicate with these masks, and facial expressions are such a huge part of how we assess what's going on with a person in therapy. So we've been looking at some of the effectiveness on options of clear face masks. I don't know if you all have seen these. Obviously, we don't know yet if they're effective and what the CDC guidelines might be, but we're researching those options. So I just throw that out as an example of just what things are you guys looking at, considering, or doing that we could all gain from hearing about?
So I can chime in, and this might be something we could actually use as an entire children's committee. I'm doing a sample training on Friday for our staff on counseling with being a mask. And if Emory was very kind to share their slide deck with us, I don't mind sharing that amongst the children's committee, but even if we wanted to sponsor a training available for people working with children, I can pull in maybe some different resources. So that's been something we've talked about. And in that training, they actually go through, whether you opt to wear a clear mask or this mask. So there was a lot of really good information in that training.
That's awesome, Megan. Thank you for offering to share that.
This is Amy Olson, and we do mental health evaluations for Head Start program. And that's one of the things that we've been really suggesting to them, because the children are so young, for them not to be able to see facial cues. So we were recommending the clear mask, as well as for them just to do more activities and books, even books where you have different facial expressions and you talk to the kids about that, because it's such an important developmental stage right now, preschool, and they really are missing those social cues.
I think that's such a great point, Amy. I personally have been trying to figure out and learn how to smile with my eyes, because it's just not normal to me to be out with people and not be able to smile at somebody in the grocery store anymore. So I that's so critical for our young children, and thank you for that, making that point.
Ricky, this is Mary. We have actually done staff button pictures. So the staff wear buttons of themselves on their chest, because a lot of the kids might be meeting us for the first time, and not being able to see our entire face is just, obviously kind of weird, to say the least. But what we've done is kind of even taken that a step further and have done like different facial expressions with those buttons that can be utilized during whatever process the therapist may feel is appropriate. But we definitely do the I am Mary kind of button. Hello, my name is Mary.
Think I love brainstorming that if you use a laptop for work, then in addition to like having a laminate or a hanger, you could also put a picture of yourself on the back side of your laptop to be like, hey, this is me and my dog. Just figured I'd randomly share that, because I think that like looking at just simple things like that would be really cool. wonder if we could even like make a guide that we could give out through the Children's Committee on like tips of working with children during COVID, like with telehealth and as we're further into the pandemic.
Great question. And I just saw Carrie's comment about the training and technical assistance. Carrie, you want to say more to the group about potentially involving them in some opportunities?
Sure. Just wanted to throw out there that we absolutely have some funding available with the new SOCAT network grant. It frees up some dollars that we can use for training and technical assistance. And so that is something we can help if there is anybody out there who is willing to do a training. We can help set that up for you, but we also have access to some national level speakers that we could potentially bring in. I mean, if this group was willing to give me a very specific list of what it is that you think could be helpful, we'd be more than happy to try to locate somebody to do that training, or if you have somebody that you think would be great at it, we can help facilitate those things and get that out there for the masses. So just wanted to throw that out there for everybody.
I think that's an amazing offer, and I think this group should take advantage of that, and let's put together a list. Obviously, Megan's shared some pretty cool ideas this morning. Are there other ideas for training that you all would like to throw out?
I can go back and look. Sorry, my planner is in here. CCJ had some incredible trainers in early childhood that might be able to talk about play therapy and working with really young kids via telehealth. I'm trying to go back to last week and tell you their names. I know there was, I'll have to go and look it up. I can email it once I pull the names.
Thank you. And I'm also noting some of what Amy Olson shared about working with preschoolers and the mask thing. I think those are opportunities we could look at some training around. I love that.
We've also done some COVID-specific lethal means restriction trainings, like how to go do a how to have the family take the camera around the house and help them safety sweep their house for hazards. The counselor will be like, oh, hey, stop. What's that right there? Okay, that needs to go get secured. Where are we going to secure that item? Oh, hey, I noticed this. Remember last week she used X, Y, and Z to self-injure. Let's make sure we've got. So there are also some tips on how to use technology to do things that we would have normally done face-to-face.
Okay.
Ricky, this is Mary again. This comment is less about training and more about environment as people, as traffic starts increasing with face-to-face. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we did at our Children and Youth Center to help alleviate the sudden shock of walking into a lobby and there being, you know, five chairs versus what clients are used to seeing, what we did was obviously space our chairs out, but then also put large stuffed animals in chairs where it would provide appropriate social distancing per family, just to kind of make it less shocking and more child friendly. So just a little creative impact on social distancing.
Well, in that vein of thinking, just thinking about as professionals delivering care, let's talk for just a second about whether you're, you know, in a leadership role or a provider role. I will say that I've I've struggled a lot with the different level of comfort that my staff have with moving back to face-to-face in some cases. So in some ways, you know, I have staff who can't wait to get there, and all the way to the other end of the spectrum where I have staff with a spouse in the home with severe medical issues, and so their fear of exposure is very high, which has created difficulty in assigning work, and at times even reassigning work in ways that we would have never done before, just to accommodate and keep everyone comfortable. How's that impacting you all, and what are your staff? What's the feedback?
This is Amy. Absolutely, that is an issue for us. And I think we've been very fortunate to be able to match, you know, clients and staff accordingly. So we have some staff that are like, thank you for your willingness to see face-to-face. So those clients that we identify really need the face-to-face, we'll pair them together, and those that can benefit from telehealth. And so far that's worked. It's kind of everybody's just banding together for the good for everybody. Instead of, hey, that's not fair. I mean, it's been a great reaction just to try to support one another. So that's kind of how we're making do.
Ricky, one of the other things that we've also done is opened up other spaces that we typically wouldn't have used for, you know, a therapy session or even a medication session that involves one, two, or three family members. So we're trying to get creative with spacing so people also feel comfortable during the time frame that they are face-to-face. And we've also considered, you know, expansion of lobbies. So what other space can you use given, you know, not really knowing what your traffic may look like?
Thanks for that, Mary. And having heard that, maybe a great time now to move into another portion or the last portion of the discussion, you know, making those kinds of changes and accommodations to the work. As leaders, I know that we are constantly watching, you know, executive orders and things that will change that may tell us how we then have to make new changes to our work, and getting really close to those deadlines and the stress around that really kind of goes across the board. And since we have Kurt, are you still here? Maybe we don't have Kurt.
No, I'm here. Sorry, my trying to find that mute button. I feel like that's the catchphrase of 2020. Trying to find the mute button.
You're on mute. Well, Kurt, I'll put you on the spot, but I just wondered if you take the last few minutes that we had together and just talk about, I know Avis shared that there were some updates to executive orders yesterday. So I just wondered if you'd just give a quick overview for this group as we finish up here.
Yeah, no problem. And this is something that Matt Yancey had asked me to go over in today's provider call at 11. So I'll do that as well. But y'all will get a preview. So on, I guess it was Thursday or Friday of last week, the governor issued three different executive orders. The first two that came down were around electronic meetings, allowing us to continue to have these meetings electronically as long as we're following provisions in the executive order. And then another executive order that probably is pretty helpful to some of y'all and maybe more in y'all's business offices, operational offices, but allowing for remote notarization and witnessing of documents. So those are kind of like the nuts and bolts things. I think the things that Ricky Moore wanted me to share about is Executive Order 67, which extends a lot of the provisions that have allowed telehealth, have allowed the suspension of the ability to suspend the commissioners to suspend licensure surveys, the ability for unlicensed individuals to provide telehealth. And there was actually a little tweak to Executive Order 67 that broadened that. Now students are included in that. It used to be that for the preceding months, you had to be unlicensed, or you could be unlicensed as long as you were a graduate of a master's level program or some type of program. Now the language is more broad to include people who are actually still in school. So bring that to the attention of your agencies, your legal counsel. Make sure that any action y'all take based on the executive order is signed off by someone in your organization. But that's something that was interesting tweak. Let's see, what else is in there? LADAC continued to be, even though there was they were included in the telemedicine bill that passed in the special session, there continues to be a provision in the executive orders to allow them to practice telemedicine. I'm trying to think if there's any other high points. But take a look through that, and that runs through, I believe, December 29th of this year. So another couple months of extension. And I know that that's something that I've heard time and time again. If I've fielded phone calls or emails from providers or advocates or members of the councils, you know, when they get close to a deadline for the expiration of an executive order, you know, when would these be extended? And the only thing I can say is that like Ricky mentioned, the modus operandi has been to renew those orders within a day or two of them being set to expire. So I anticipate that's going to be the process moving forward. So try to plan for that as best you can. I know it's very difficult because everyone wants a little bit more certainty in their life these days. So that's my update. I also heard that Adam Nikas is on the phone, which, man, we have celebrities joining us on these calls now. So I don't know if y'all know Adam, but he is, I think he actually played for the Memphis Grizzlies at some point in time. So, no, I'm joking. I hope y'all have a good day. And if y'all got any questions about the EOs, please let me know.
Thank you, Kurt. Any questions for Kurt? Okay. Well, thank you all for participating in the discussion today. It certainly, I think, benefits all of us to kind of stretch our thinking, share through all of this uncertainty, what we're doing and how we're moving forward, and hopefully learn from each other. So if, as always, if you have ideas or thoughts about things you want to hear about or people you want to hear from on these calls, please don't hesitate to email myself or Kirby or Lindsay and let us know. And I thank you all for being here today, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ricky.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.